Hey everyone, this is Stathis Theodoropoulos, filling in for Thanos Tavelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council in Kathimerini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. On Monday, 28 members of the U.S. House of Representatives, led by Congressman David Cicilline of Rhode Island and Gus Bilirakis of Florida, wrote to Secretary of State Antony Blinken to express concern over Turkey's armed unmanned aerial vehicle program, which has destabilized multiple regions of the globe and threatens U.S. interests, allies, and partners. HELC's Executive Director Andy Zemanidis joins us today to discuss the latest congressional initiative that holds Turkey's feet to the fire, why Turkey's drone program is such a threat, and the advocacy coalition that has developed around this issue. Andy, welcome back to The Greek Current.
Stathi, good to be on. I'm a little miffed that you didn't let me be your debut guest, but I'm looking forward to the competition you're putting up for Thanos.
Listen, Thanos is Thanos and I'm Iron Man, so we got a great battle in front of us in this world. So, Andy, talk to us a little bit about timing of this letter. Why did this issue arise right now?
Well, you know, Turkey's drone program, killer drone program, that is, has been a feature in regional flashpoints for a while, but it took kind of prime attention during the war in Artsakh because Armenia utilized these Turkish drones and decisively. Really, you could say they won because of them. You saw the same thing happen in Libya with these killer drones. But it was in Artsakh that we saw them being used against Armenian civilians. So the human rights concerns came to the forefront. And it was also where we discovered the amount of American components in them, because the Armenians had shot one down and discovered at least 10 American components and a number of Canadian components. Beyond that, there has been quite a bit of mainstream media attention on this issue, which is surprising because Turkey is flown under the radar screen for so long, and now there has so many issues on the front burner. But you know, Michael Rubin did an article about this in the National Interest. The Wall Street Journal did a big expose on the Turkey drone program back in June, and you know, we've gotten constant reports of Turkey expanding and selling this. So the timing is right on. It's developed slowly, but it is something that has gotten enough eyes on it right now that it's a perfect time, especially with incoming officials, a new Assistant Secretary of State for Europe, who will have, for lack of a better word, jurisdiction over Turkey, coming in the fall. The beginning of confirmation hearings for ambassadors, including a new ambassador to Turkey, will be occurring in the fall. So the timing is ideal.
We know from our advocacy work that Turkey has effectively disregarded previous expressions of concern from Congress. Why do we think this is going to be different?
Well, I don't think it's simply an expression of concern. The Cicilline-Bilirakis letter and the 28 members of Congress express their concern at the front end, but they lay out a pretty solid legal case, right? So they point out that if American components are continuing to be transferred, that they suspect it's in violation of the CATSA sanctions as imposed. That's very important. This is Congress exercising some oversight authority and saying, we called for sanctions, you imposed them. We want to make sure they're being imposed fully and correctly. So is there a chance that somebody missed this? Yeah, there's a chance. There's also a chance that these components have stopped. But if they have not stopped, this is Congress letting you know we want this stopped. It also requests a briefing from the State Department. So this is not going to be a very, let's say, vanilla report, 2-3-page memo that the State Department sends out as they have in the past that obscures the issue. This is Congress saying, we want you to come here. We want to have a back and forth. There are going to be difficult discussions. Congress has clearly declared that it's going to exercise oversight here. And given the precedent that Canada has already sent, I noted before that there were not only American components, but Canadian components. And Canada, in April, suspended all export licenses for its components. Given that precedent, I would be taking this initiative pretty seriously. And it's not only the House. Remember, a couple of weeks ago, Undersecretary of State Victoria Nuland appeared before the full Senate Foreign Relations Committee for a hearing only on Turkey, and Senator Menendez grilled her on the drones, and she didn't have an answer. So they're going to have to go back to the Senate and report as well.
So let's talk a little bit more about this program. Do you consider the drone program a continuing threat to Greece, Cyprus, and the West?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, first of all, it has been to begin with. If you look at how this drone program has been utilized already, it's been used against Kurds while they were fighting on our side against ISIS. They've been used in the Libyan civil war at a point where we are asking for the removal of foreign troops, foreign weaponry, when the Congress is passing the Libya Stabilization Act. I've already noted the use of these drones in Artsakh, definitely being used against civilians, which violates our commitment to human rights, that has supposedly taken center stage in American foreign policy again. It also destabilizes the South Caucasus, right? And it makes Russia and Turkey even bigger players in that region. So that's where they've been deployed, right? And they've been deployed almost with enthusiasm from Turkey, because they've been deployed in the three regions that I just mentioned, they've been deployed in conjunction with Syrian mercenaries too. So when a country can go to war and not have to worry about, we always say, you know, war, you measure the cost of war in blood and treasure. Well, when you don't have to measure the blood of your own citizens, so no Turkish blood is at risk, they go to war more easily. Now, when it comes to Greece and Cyprus and the West, Michael Rubin's article that I mentioned before talks about Turkey's declaration and commitment to building a permanent drone base in occupied Cyprus. That, one, complicates any resolution to the Cyprus problem. Two, threatens a lot of the cooperation on the security front that you see the U.S., Israel, Cyprus, Greece, Egypt, the Emirates, all of that. This is a threat to that. They've also declared that they are going to re-outfit their amphibious assault ships, which originally were going to have F-35 landing platforms. Turkey is out of the F-35 program. So these F-35 landing platforms are going to now be replaced with drone landing platforms, which make these drones a threat all the way from the northern edges of the Black Sea to the Western Mediterranean. But really raises the prospect of drones making the Aegean more of a flashpoint and the Eastern Mediterranean more of a flashpoint. So Turkey is selling these drones to Pakistan. So that think of what effect introducing these drones into the flashpoint called Kashmir between two nuclear states may be. So there's nowhere that you look around and say, oh, you know, these drones may be a force for stability. These are a destabilizing force being wielded by a regime who has already proven that they'll use them nonchalantly and as a destabilizing force.
So you just spoke about how these drones are being spread globally. Part of AHLC's modus operandi has been working with coalition partners, for example, working with AJC and the Congressional Hellenic Israel Alliance Caucus with the Armenian National Committee on Genocide Recognition and Prevention. This letter appears to have a broader new coalition. What can you tell us about that coalition?
Sure, yeah. This, of course, we've worked with the Armenian National Committee on this letter again, as well with the Hindu American Foundation, the American Friends of Kurdistan, the Middle East Forum, and in defense of Christians. This shows, you know, Turkey is spending a lot of money on charm offensives and new lobbyists, and you know, for people who are just calling, like Greece should just, you know, hire a new firm. This shows the power of American civic organizations, and it also shows that people are paying attention across the board. Turkey is a threat in multiple regions. This is not some, you know, Greco-Turkish grudge, right? The Turkish trolls are out there and have long been out there saying, we just hate Turkey, and or the Armenians just hate Turkey. Well, when you look at this coalition, and this is a corollary to the little quip we have now. Turkey has gone from zero problems with neighbors, foreign policy, to zero neighbors without which it has problems. When every group and almost every think tank is now seeing Turkey as a threat, as a destabilizing factor, as something akin to a rogue state, that's something people should pay attention to. And you know, the Armenian National Committee, you know, we the Hellenic American community and Armenians have long worked together. We, within Defense of Christians, we've worked, especially the last few years, we worked on a No Jets for Turkey campaign. We've done religious freedom initiatives with them. Partnering up with the Hindu American Foundation, I think, is significant because it also mirrors a growing alliance between Greece and India, a partnership there. And American Friends of Kurdistan, which, full disclosure, I serve on their advisory committee, but they've bled for America, and they've bled in the war against ISIS. The Kurds have, and it's time that we honor that sacrifice.
A month ago, you wrote that Turkey is conducting a disingenuous charm offensive. How do you think that charm offensive has gone? And how does this letter fit into that?
You know, Turkey, since the swearing in of President Biden, they have a new ambassador who's hosting dinner parties and talking to a lot of people and doing a lot of photo ops. They've hired a new lobbying law firm to try to get him out of the CATS sanctions and get him back into F-35. And they're portraying a stylistic change. Now, nothing substantive, nothing new, right? Nothing will get rid of the S-400s, will stop jailing, will stop being the world's leading jailer of journalists, will reconvert Hagia Sophia back to a museum, will stop occupying Cyprus. Nothing at all substantive. But either this is evidence of Ankara's belief that their previous diplomats were just too harsh, but this stylistic change hasn't convinced anyone. If you look at what's happened over this first 8 months of the year, you've had multiple letters from Congress on human rights situations in Turkey. You've had the administration consistently from the podium, on Twitter, in meetings, be plain spoken on Turkey and pretty harsh. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that even on Verosha, hearing the Biden administration use the words condemn on Turkey, watching the Biden administration lead the charge at the UN Security Council for a condemnation when the British were avoiding the word condemnation, that's something that nobody would have expected. This letter is another indication. And I do have to point out that getting 28 members of Congress to sign on as they were leaving town for the August recess, and in overwhelming bipartisan fashion, I think is noteworthy. So the charm offensive, I think, has fallen flat. Turkey better get the signal that it has to play defense. But more importantly, it's not a stylistic change that Congress is looking for. It's a substantive change, a policy change.
Andy, thank you for joining us on The Greek Current again. It was great chatting with you.
I look forward to talking to you again, Stathi.